show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we got more baseball things to talk about, which we will do shortly. But before that, first, I am, of course, am Jeff Herr, and with me on the eve of Friday the 13th is a former counselor of Camp Crystal Lake, Mike Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this evening? It must make you nervous being a former counselor at Camp Crystal Lake.
I didn't realize it's Friday the 13th tomorrow.
So. Not until just now. This is why I'm here. I'm here to keep you informed of these things.
I'm not very superstitious, so I'm not even a little stitious.
Nor am I. It's mostly just I get fascinated by the seemingly unrandom occurrence of random things. So, like, you know, and I was actually – my wife and I took a walk with our daughter right before we recorded, and I was talking to her. I was like, tomorrow's Friday the 13th. I was like, it feels like we have at least one every year. I wonder if there's – like because of some sort of mathematical formula, it all works out that we're guaranteed a certain number of Friday the 13ths in any given year. Always kind of stuff like that I find nerdily interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And it's just like a recognition thing of, oh, you recognize it because it's an exception because it's Friday the 13th and everybody's mentioned that. No one says Monday the 13th.
No. And if there wasn't a movie named Friday the 13th, would we even care that it's the Friday?
Maybe not as much, no.
I don't know if that was a thing that people kept track of before 1981 or whenever that movie came out. Who knows? Somebody does, but not me.
Right.
Anyway, so we do have baseball things to talk about instead of old horror movies. But
how can you tell the difference some days, right?
That's true. As Royals fans this year, it might be equally as gross. So,
by July, maybe, yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Well, we won't go there yet. It's early.
Plenty of time.
The Royals currently sit at 3-7. A tough loss yesterday to the Seattle Mariners. It would have been, they would have won the series had they won. They did not, of course. But 4-6 would have felt at least a little bit better than 3-7 as they go into a series against one of the hottest teams in the league in the LA Angels with the phenom himself, Shohei Ohtani, who is actually, as we speak, he had just stepped up to plate as we started recording. So I'm not sure what has occurred yet. I haven't got any notification of any sort of a 18 run homer or something, but it's certainly possible with him. And
he actually struck out. I have the game on.
Oh, he did. Look at that.
Muted. Struck out looking on a little two seamer.
Boom. There you go. The Royals are the Ohtani killers with the pitching staff. He is scheduled to pitch on Sunday as well. So I suppose we can go on a little bit of a rejection here just because I find the Shohei Ohtani, just everything about him as a player to be utterly fascinating. And the baseball world is going nuts for him right now, rightfully so. And it's amazing what he's able to do on the mound. And he's already hit three home runs this year, and he hit three home runs within their first 10 games. And he's the first person since I can't remember the name of the guy, but it was 1919 the last time that anyone had done that. I mean, he's very Babe Ruth-like, and that's, you know, because as many people forget, Babe Ruth was a pitcher, you know, earlier in his career. So he was the first kind of player to dominate both. Kind of as a two-way player, if you will. So it's really interesting. And then it's bringing up lots of questions, you know. And Ohtani's actually DHing for the Angels when he's not pitching, which is seemingly crazy. And as a side note to that, anyone who ever tries to talk about, you know, because a lot of times I don't like pitchers hitting. And so people are, oh, it's the soul of the game and all that business, you know, whatever. Well, if you're going to argue for pitchers hitting, then your standard has to be someone like Shohei Ohtani or, you know, Madison Bumgarner or whatever. He probably could, you know, he was probably good enough to hit on some of his off days. But, you know, the vast majority of pitchers aren't at that level. No. So if that's your argument that they all should be at that level and that's what you want, then okay, I'm all for that. But the way it is now. But that's it. That's beside the point. But he's going. And the questions are, you know, because if you're just a regular player, a position player, then, you know, I don't know how many swings you're taking in the cages every day, you know, before a game, 100 maybe. You know, I don't know how it goes. It probably depends a lot on the player and the team and all that. So you've got that. And, you know, that's not exactly easy. You know, if you go in and swing a bat 100 times, even if you're not hitting the ball, just, you know, that's going to be taxing on your body. And then on top of that, as a pitcher, you know, you have a very regimented routine in your off days of you're doing these pitches and or you're throwing the ball in this way on this particular day, or you're throwing this amount of pitches, you're on flat ground, you're on raised ground, you're doing a bullpen session, side session, all these different things that go into it. So is he going to be able to manage that workload of making sure he's getting his pitches in, keeping his arm warm and getting rested up, but also, you know, getting ready and getting his arm and body ready for his next start, while also getting in the batting cages and staying sharp because teams are going to start adjust to his style offensively. So I'm just fascinated by the whole thing. I don't know if I have much more to add than that, but I think it's pretty awesome. And I would love to see a lot more players. I know the, I believe it was the Rays drafted a player last year who was a two-way player, and they said, you know, they're going to let him try it out in the minor leagues and try and be a two-way player similar to Ohtani, and if it'll work, you know. And I'm not going to say it's going to be a new trend here that's going to start in Major League Baseball, but I would love it if it would. I think it's really fascinating, and I really want to see how he does over the whole course of the season.
Yeah, I hope he goes 0 for the next four games. But after that, if he wants to tear it up, I'm all for it. I think he's really cool, too. I think, you know, the one thing that this spring, he really struggled. Like, he didn't hit that well. He didn't pitch that well. He was pitching on the backfields, and reports were that he wasn't doing great. And a lot of people started to be like, ooh, what's going on? Is he going to adjust? And he comes out, hits those three homers, like you said. His second start takes a perfect game into the seventh inning, strikes out, what, I think 12 batters.
Mm-hmm.
Just phenomenal. I mean, literally phenomenal.
He is the Brendan Fraser character from The Scout.
Yeah, he really is.
I really remember that movie. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, and, you know, I think on top of just the physical, you know, use of his time, there's also the preparation that goes into it, because you've got to go over scouting reports as a pitcher, but you've also, if you're going to be a hitter, you have to, you know, a lot of guys use video. There's going to be preparations on the next series starters they have to go through. And, you know, there's only so much time for a lot of those things. So if he can show that he can balance it and other teams start to maybe look at that blueprint, that might be something that kind of works out for other players who have some of that double duty ability. I mean, we see it all the time. Brad Eibner came up. He was a pitcher in college and an outfielder and basically had to pick one. Ricky Ankiel was, you know, a pitcher who then converted to be an outfielder and was a fine enough hitter when he was an outfielder. Khalil Lee, one of the Royals' top prospects, was a pitcher in high school and had to make that choice. And, you know, now he's a hitter. So I wonder if you will see some more teams more open to that kind of thing once they see that it works. You know, it's a copycat league. And if you can find guys like that kind of, you know, add more flexibility to your roster, but also help you get a little bit more out of a position, like, you know, I'm sure if Ian Kennedy could hit, it'd be really great to have him hit every now and then too, on top of whatever starts he makes, just because it's just another player who can contribute in many different ways. So I think it's really kind of cool. I think it's good for the game. I'm with you. I'm an AL fan, so I figure if pitchers were meant to hit, they would be able to hit. But some of them can. And I think some of them over the course of a full season could probably hit decent enough to not, you know, be terrible. You know, so I think if this is something that gets more of that well-roundedness into you know, baseball player mentality, I don't think that's bad for anything. I think that's interesting. So we'll see what he can do. He's 23, so, I mean, he's going to be doing this for a while, feasibly. So there's plenty of time for it to reach down and give other teams an opportunity to kind of see what happens. It, you know, probably not overnight, but, you know, 2-3 years, you might start seeing some of those guys that get drafted out of college who can do both, and they get the opportunity to do both. And can teams just give it a shot. So, yeah, very, very interesting player. And his success, I think, is just good for baseball. So really kind of fun to watch him. And, it, you know, again, it'll be really fun to watch him go 0-for for the next four games.
Yes. So. Yeah, so not too much more on that, but just wanted to mention it, especially since the Royals are playing the Angels and will actually face Ohtani. It's a fascinating story right now, one of the bigger stories in baseball. But now two more Royal-centric stuff. We got some news from the past week. We'll start off with some somber news as Alex Gordon is headed to the DL. It's a torn labrum. Was it?
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah, labrum. So, which is, when did he have that injury? Was that 2011 or 2010? I mean,
he injured his hip. It was 2009, It was at that time it was in his right hip, and he had surgery to correct it. He missed a couple months. It was basically a lost season for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was really rough year, one of those years where the Royals kind of felt like they were going to have a shot to contend, and nothing went right for them. Well, except Zach Greinke. That went pretty well.
That went very right.
That's about it, though. That's about all that went well. So, yeah, now he's got a tear in his left hip, though they do say that it shouldn't require surgery, so that's at least a benefit from last time. But it's still something that's going to keep him out for a couple of weeks. You know, I don't know if it's something that popped up because he has been playing more center field. Maybe there's more range. I don't know. But, you know, it just seems like just another thing that's come up for him. And, you know, after a slow start, it's kind of the last thing you want to see because, you know, I think everybody would like to see Alex Gordon put it back together. But just not going to have the opportunity for a little while. So he'll be on the DL, and, you know, we'll see how that kind of goes. The Royals called up Abraham Almonte, who we talked about a lot last week. Don't really need to talk about him that much more. You know, they'll probably bounce between Almonte and Paulo Orlando in center field. John Jay might slide over there. I don't know. I mean, if it's something that ends up, I kind of feel like this is how it's going to go. Alex Gordon's going to go and recover for a couple of weeks. And then when he's ready to come back, they'll end up throwing him in the minors on a rehab assignment. And maybe that'll be something that gives him the opportunity to kind of get things back in gear. Not only just in the recovery from an injury, but also just his last two seasons have been so miserable that, you know, if he can get 2 weeks to just go hit AAA pitching for a while, maybe it wakens something up. That's optimistic. It might just be that nothing's going to work, but that's kind of how I feel like it's going to, over the next month and a half, or however long it takes for him to come back. You know, it feels like that's kind of, you know, where it's going to be at for him. And then, you know, we'll see how he responds to all of that when he comes back.
If I remember the sequence of events correctly, which I may not because it's been a while, but he pretty much lost all of 2009 with that injury. And then 2010 was the season that he went down and learned a new position to the minors, right?
Yep.
And that's when he learned how to play the outfield and then came back at the end of that season. And then 2011 was when he broke out and had that such an that amazing year that he had. So, you know, obviously different things now, but who knows? Like you said, you know, you might be onto something. Maybe he takes a rehab assignment, goes down and has a couple weeks of really good. He's able to refocus his energy on you know, what he's doing wrong, what he needs to change, and he's able to come back and salvage. I mean, we're hardly into the season, but right. You know, salvage the rest of his contract since he's already lost a couple of years to poor play. So, you know, hoping for the best there. It's, you know, it's unfortunate. We've talked many times before how we'd love nothing more than to see Alex Gordon especially succeed on this team, but, you know, he just unfortunately hasn't, and hopefully he can heal up and get right and, you know, turn in a decent season when he gets back, because it's not been good so far in this contract, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think that the Royals would get 5 2011 years out of that contract.
No.
But I didn't think it'd be this bad either. So it's, yeah, they're, I don't know.
Yeah, you figure two of those years he would have been good, and then maybe one where he's average, maybe even touch below, and then maybe that last year is where it finally starts to bottom out. But, man, it's just been, you know, it's been difficult through the whole thing so far, and there's not much of a sign of it turning around, which is unfortunate because Alex Gordon is one of those guys that the Royals wouldn't have been in the position they were in 2014 or 2015 to play for and then win a world championship without Alex Gordon. So,
no,
his legacy takes a little bit of a dent, but, you know, still one of my favorite guys to have in Kansas City, even in the frustrating times, even though it's a little sad right now. But hopefully he gets it turned around. That's all we can really do is kind of, you know, hope for it, because, you know, there's not many other signs right now. So
no, there absolutely is not.
No.
But so, you know, what are you going
to
do?
One positive injury development, though, is that Sal Perez has taken BP. He's starting to run bases.
Yes.
He's already starting to kind of work back. I follow him on Instagram, and he's been posting a lot of different videos of the rehab that he's been doing. A lot of work in the kind of walking pool thing. I guess that helps add strength, gives you more resistance. I don't know. I'm not a physical therapist.
Right.
Don't play one on TV. But, you know, if the original idea was 4 to 6 weeks, it might be closer to that 4 weeks. It might still be 6 weeks. It might even still be 8 weeks. It just kind of depends on, you know, how he actually comes back. He looked pretty good throwing on the side. He looked pretty good swinging. He's doing a little bit of catching drills. Still looks a little ginger when he's running, which part of that is he's Sal Perez, but part of that is because it is, you know, a significant knee injury, and he's probably going about 50% from what I've seen on the videos he's posted, at least. So, but it's positive. I mean, he's out there working, and, you know, he wouldn't be going through all of those things if they didn't feel like the timetable was working out right to get him into that kind of position. So
right.
If he's able to come back, that will boost the Royals quite a lot from just, you know, a morale standpoint, but also in the lineup, because lineup's pretty thin once you get past about four. And Sal Perez would really kind of help that out quite a lot. So that you don't have, you know, Abraham Amonte hitting sixth or Ryan Goins hitting sixth. Which has happened a couple times.
Yeah, unfortunately. So hopefully, you know, good luck to Alex. Hopefully he gets Alex and Salvi. Hope they get well soon and get back in the lineup and start playing well, because the Royals are going to need them both if they're going to do anything this season, because they were bad enough so far offensively with Gordon being not that great. So, you know, it's without him, who knows what it's going to be. And they haven't had Salvi all season yet. So Yep. We will see.
And they're missing Bonifacio too, which hurts quite a lot too. So
yes, it does.
Just
and
one
he
more
will
bat.
Not be back for quite a while.
Yeah, somewhere in June. So
yes.
Awesome.
Yes. Now moving on to a more positive aspect.
Yeah.
We have some good things to talk about. Number one good thing to talk about for the Royals right now is Jacob Junis. Okay, do you know if I've always called him Jake Junis because that's what
Me
I thought
too.
He went by. Do you know if – now I see everyone calling him Jacob. Do you know if he has a preference? Maybe we should ask Flint.
I think I saw Flanny say that he prefers Jacob. So
he does? Okay, so we'll
call
him.
Trying to use Jacob more often.
Okay.
Instead of Jake, but –
So Jacob Junis, but he has been, you know, we talked about his first start earlier in the season and how well he did, and his second start was even better. He almost pitched a no-hitter. He ended up getting it broken up by someone that he was actually – did you hear the story with this? He mentioned an interview. I can't – they were roommates in college or something?
Yeah, I don't remember what the connection was, but it was
something.
It was he and Dan Vogelbach who hit a line drive. They almost had a play on it too. The Royals, we talked so much about the shift. The Royals had a shift on, and he hit it right into it, but it was hit so hard, and it was just a little bit off to the side of Escobar, and he just wasn't able to make the play. It was, you know, solid hit. If they weren't shifting, it would have been a single straight up the middle. But yeah, they're roommates or teammates, or they played together against each other. I don't remember what the story was, but yeah, they definitely had a connection somewhere in the past, which is interesting.
Yeah, he said if someone was going to break up his no-hitter, he was glad it was that it was Vogelbach. So okay, I guess. But the more important point here is how well he's done, and so for the second time in a row. He's been the beneficiary of the lightning rod for Royals victory. He had seven innings pitched, only gave up the one hit, and then he got taken out. He had three strikeouts and two walks. You'd like to see those strikeout numbers a little bit higher. But the fact that he unfortunately, I wasn't watching the game. I was kind of following along on my phone, and if I could any way I could, but wasn't able to watch. But it sounded like from some of the reports that he wasn't even really – on, if you will, where he didn't have his best stuff. And, you know, so if he's not having his best stuff and he's still pitching like that, you know, that's a really good sign, because not only did he do all that and go seven innings, but he only threw 90 pitches. So, and then the previous game when he went seven innings, he threw 87 pitches. So, I mean, that's, you know, pretty good pitch efficiency. You know, someone like Danny Duffy would be very jealous of such efficiency there. You know, it's not like super efficient, you know, but that's right where you need to be. You know, if he was if he still had the no hitter, you know, you'd say, you know, it would start to get a little touch and go depending on where it was, you know, because if you'd send him back out for the eighth and he's at like 105 pitches, do you send him back out for the ninth? That's where it gets dicey. But you know, had they wanted to, you know, if he wasn't so young and new, they might have, you know, if he was more of a veteran, they might have let him go back out for the eighth anyway at 90 pitches and try and just, you know, get another inning out of him. But regardless, you know, he's been fantastic. So it's only been two games, of course, but he's been fantastic so far. And one of the lone bright spots in what's been a very actually somewhat tumultuous early season with the injury to Salvi and the suspension with Bonifacio and now the injury to Gordon and the injury to Carnes that happened all kind of right in those, you know, week or two leading up to the season. And then Royals are, you know, season starts, they got to get going. And it's been kind of a topsy-turvy thing, but Jacob Junis has really done well so far. And it's been fun to kind of see him develop, and hopefully, you know, hopefully he can keep it rolling. I'm excited to see what he's got the rest of the way.
Yeah, he showed a lot of that in the last 2 months last year. And, you know, one other thing that when you watch him that you'll notice is, and, you know, they brought this up during the broadcast, but he just works fast. He gets the ball and he goes, you know, I mean, he just zips right through it. And I think that probably helps him quite a lot. He also has always had really good control as he's come up through the minors, so there's not a lot of walks. The slider can work as a strikeout pitch or just something to get, you know, soft contact. So he's got a lot of things working for him. And like you said, he wasn't that sharp. He hit three guys. He walked a couple guys in that game, even though he was getting a no-hitter. But nobody was squaring him up at all. And, you know, I think that shows, you know, that he's able to mix his pitches quite a lot. He's pretty unflappable. You know, he just kind of takes the ball and goes. And for that to come from someone that we really hadn't talked about that much over the last few years, that could be a really nice little find for the Royals. As it is right now, he's allowed four total hits. He's hit three guys, so those are almost equal. But when you look at other guys on the Royals, you know, pitching staff, Brandon Maurer, Blaine Boyer, Brian Flynn, these are guys who are coming out of the bullpen. They've all allowed more hits than him already. So, you know, they need to step it up. But that just shows how strong he's been, that he's put these two starts back-to-back. Now, he's going to get hit. You know, everybody gets hit. Clayton Kershaw gets hit. Pedro Martinez got hit. You know, everybody is going to have a bad start here or there. So, you know, that'll happen. But, you know, if he has starts that are even partially like what he's shown so far, it's pretty encouraging. And, you know, the Royals have had a couple of games that got away from them that were probably winnable. But Junis has been the guy, you know, he's gotten the ball. So that's a nice bright spot. I also saw a stat that I think following a loss, the Royals have won all but one game that he started following a loss since, maybe it's since August. It's one of those things they flashed on the TV. So, you know, he just has that kind of consistency going over his last, you know, 2 months last year and his first couple weeks here. And if that continues, you know, that gives the Royals a really nice compliment to Danny Duffy. Ian Kennedy has pitched pretty well out of the gate too. And if he's healthy and can pitch well and be closer to 2016 Ian Kennedy, it's not a bad trio. So, you know, the Royals rotation by and large has pitched pretty well. I mean, they've had bad games. Duffy on opening day was pretty bad. Hamill, his first start was bad. Eric Skoglund was pretty bad, but you know, the other games have been pretty good. And, you know, if they're good more often than not, it gives the Royals at least an opportunity to do something. So it's very encouraging. It's a lot more fun to watch so far than last year, where, you know, the fourth and fifth spots would come up and you weren't really sure who the heck was going to be doing what. You know, much, you didn't know who was going to start, much less how well they would do. So it feels a lot better. Granted, it is early. So, I mean, all kinds of things can happen. Danny Duffy's had some rough first innings over his last two starts, but he's kind of put it back together. But still, there are, you know, velocity questions. He hasn't pitched past the sixth inning yet. So, you know, you want to see that from the guy that you call your ace. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's taken situations where it could have been a really disastrous start that he gets yanked out of in the fourth inning. And he's been able to at least soldier on and get, you know, into the sixth inning, even if he doesn't complete it. So, you know, he's able to battle a little bit. So that's also encouraging, because if he can get that first inning stuff worked out, you know, hopefully it carries over through the rest. And, you know, then you've got three guys who can have a quality start pretty much any given time. And for the Royals, they kind of need that, because they need to limit runs as much as they can, because they're not scoring that much yet.
Yeah, and it's been it's been, offensively, it's been pretty rough to watch. And, you know, Duffy, you brought up a good point, how he was kind of able to battle back a little bit. His last start specifically, you know, he had another he had a rough first inning, gave up a couple runs, had a bases loaded at one point.
There was an error that didn't help.
And, you know, we've seen Duffy in the past have something like that happen, and it kind of gets him out of his mental game. And Duffy, it seems, more so than many other pitchers, when he kind of gets out of that realm, it becomes more difficult for him to be consistent with his pitches. And there might have been a little bit of that, but he was able to kind of refocus and right the ship. And, you know, I think that's part of his maturity as he's grown in his career, that he's able to more easily move past those types of things. And he battled back and had a good rest of his start. You see, like you said, he only went the six innings, but, you know, at the same time, having five pretty clean innings after that first one was a good thing to see. So maybe, you know, like you said, there's still some of those extraneous kind of velocity concerns and things like that you wonder, is there something else going on that we're not privy to that we don't see? Who knows? But hopefully, you know, he can kind of keep that momentum he had from the end of his last start and roll that into his next one and get a little bit better with, you know, like you said, what you need from your ace pitcher of your staff. And, you know, the Royals need all the help they can get at this point, because offensively they're looking pretty meager on things. Like we talked about earlier at the top of the show, only four home runs the Royals have hit, and only from two players. You know, Moose has two, and Lucas Duda has two. So, you know, good to see Moose, you know, get back up on the power game a little bit. And he, you know, he's leading the charge offensively.
he's waiting. He's looking behind him, like waiting for everybody else. Nobody else has a 700 OPS. No, Moose is at 935 or 930. Something.
Yep, 932.
So
I got it pulled up here. So he's, you know, he's doing well where we think Moose would be. And then, you know, after we talked about the objectively terrible start for Jorge Soler, he's picked up his game a little bit, at least for a couple days there. He had a couple multi-hit games, and he was doing a little bit better. You know, last couple games have been a little bit back to where he was earlier in the, it's only been 10 games, but right, in that kind of early stretch there. So, you know, he's starting to figure, you know, kind of, starting to figure things out a little bit, and hopefully he can. I've always kind of thought, just from what I've heard and what I've seen, that he would be kind of a more streaky hitter, and it was just that he would have fallen into some of the same problems that Hosmer had as of a few years ago, where it was, you know, the bad streaks are going to happen, everyone knows it, but can you limit those bad streaks to being as small as possible? You know, that's kind of what I always thought the kind of type of hitter that he would be. So hopefully that's the case, and he does learn how to limit the smaller the bad streaks, and he's able to, you know, get those good streaks going and get those moving with hopefully here soon, because the Royals need him. Because as you said, nobody else, including Soler, has a besides Moustakas, has an OPS over 700, and nobody particularly close, really. I mean, John Jay is a 688, as I'm looking at the team stats here, and that's about it. Everyone else is more in the 650 range. So, you know, some positives. You know, Jorge Soler has a 375 on base, which is nice, especially considering he's, let's see, it looks like he's second in the team in strikeouts.
Yeah. But, two more tonight, it looks like. So that's.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Whit Merrifield's got a 333 on base, and Cuthbert's 353. So, you know, Cuthbert's only, I guess he's played 9 games, but. So it's, you know, there's not a ton to latch on to right now offensively. And
no. Not a lot of extra base hits. Not a lot of slug.
No,
and that's kind of the main thing. They just, you know, they get guys. They've gotten some guys on, but they just haven't gotten the big hit to like the double that clears the bases, or you know, just some guy leading off and hitting a homer. You know, just they only have 4 homers. Some of that might be the weather. It has been pretty cold, but you know, other teams have hit homers in the cold too. So, you know, that only goes so far. They just, you know, I think once some of that normalizes, yeah, all that those numbers and those OPS figures will go up. But yeah, I mean, they're just struggling to score runs, and they're not hitting the ball, you know, over the fence or in the gaps that much. So, you know, if you're not doing that, you're relying on singles, and that's, you know, usually takes about three singles to score a run, and that's kind of tough to string together consistently. And that's where the Royals kind of land. You know, you can get two, but you strand those two guys. It's just what they've kind of, and they've always kind of done that, like,
yeah,
forever.
That's the Royal way.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I thought that the game we were talking about where Jacob Junis was pitching that no-hitter through into the seventh inning, it was that game. The Royals ended up winning 10-0 that game. And so they were, you know, that was the game I thought that was going to break them out offensively. After that, they were going to kind of wake up a little bit, you know, as the weather was getting a little bit nicer. Of course, it keeps vacillating. You know, it's 80 degrees one day like it was today, and then it'll be, you know, 40 degrees on Sunday. So who the hell knows? But, right. You know, hopefully as the weather gets a little bit nice, you know, nicer and more consistent, maybe, I don't know how much of a difference that'll make. It's kind of a catch-22 because it usually makes it easier on the hitters. But maybe a little bit more difficult on the pitchers. So, you know, we will see how that works. But I really thought that game was going to kind of break them out a little bit and wake up their bats. But then they've kind of gone right back to, like you said, doing the, you know, stranding people on and just not getting those big hits when they need them. And it's cost them, you know, a couple games that were very winnable games that they just... They had the chance, they had the opportunity, and it just kind of fell away from them. So they had, it was a game cup, they had the extra innings against, crap, I'm drawing a blank.
There was a game against the Indians that I think they lost close.
Yes, that's the one, yes. It's 3-1 because they gave up a walk-off home run.
Yeah.
In the 10th inning, let's see.
Because you're not allowed to use your closer if it's not a safe situation.
Yes, little known fact.
Yeah.
On that. Oh, no, it was the ninth inning. It was the bottom of the ninth. Never mind. Not extra innings. My fault. So it was bottom of the ninth walk-off.
Same difference. But, yeah, scored, what? They've scored one run and only one run in 1, 2, 3, 4 out of their first 10 games. And they've scored two runs in just a couple of games. So... You know, it doesn't change much from previous years. You get to that 4-run level, and you stand a decent chance to win. They had a chance to win that Seattle game yesterday. They only scored 2 runs. They had the bases loaded at one point. Didn't get it. They scored just 1 in that Cleveland game that you just brought up. You know, you know, a lot of things happened in that game that kind of went against them, but... You know, the ultimate thing is they only scored 1 run. They only scored 2 runs in the opening game of that series. They scored, you know, 2 total runs against Detroit. They were lucky that Jake Junis is apparently a robot and managed to lead the way on a shutout. So, you know, they just got to score runs.
Yeah, when you consider they've scored 31 runs in 10 games, but 17 of those runs came in 2 of those 10 games. So in the other 8 games, they've scored 14 runs. You got some problems when that's what you're putting out there. So unfortunately, you know, hopefully they can get back on track, and I'm hoping, you know, maybe hopefully it happens sooner. But you know, if nothing else, you know, by the time Salvador Perez gets back, they'll be in the swing of things, and he can just be inserted into a lineup that's already going, because the last thing you want is someone coming off a pretty significant injury like that and then having to try and throw them in and say, okay, you got to carry this offense now as soon as you come back, which is kind of the fear, I think. So
it's a reasonable expectation of what's going to happen.
Unfortunately, I think that's where we're headed, but you really hope that's not the case. But, you know, who knows? And it's, you know, the Royals need all the help they can get, because, you know, we talked about Jacob Junis doing well, and you know Ian Kennedy's been pitching pretty well, but outside of that, it's been pretty rough. And then, you know, that includes the bullpen. We've been so spoiled in years past with the Royals and having just these epic, historic, amazing bullpens, and you know this year, that's just not the case so far. They've come back and had some better showings the last few games, but you know overall it's not been that great. Now Kelvin Herrera, you know, thankfully he seems to be, in what we've seen from him in 3.1 innings pitched so far this year, he seems to be closer to back on track than he was last year. He's got two saves. He's been putting in some non-save situations just to get some work, but six strikeouts in 3.1 innings. He seems to be back to where he needs to be.
He sure looks better.
Yes, and you know Brad Keller's been a surprise. He's had five innings of some really good, five scoreless innings that he's pitched. We've had Tim Hill, who's been good as well. So, you know, there's been some bright spots. Unfortunately, you're plugging in Blaine Boyer in there as well. You're plugging in Justin Grimm. Yeah. You know, you've had Brian Flynn in there, Brandon Maurer, of course. And, you know, so those kind of counteract any of the goodness with their extreme badness. If those are not words, but you know, you get where I'm going with that. So it's, you know, unfortunately the bullpen it's been a mixed bag this year. And when the Royals are in a position, like when Danny Duffy leaves a game where he was able to battle back from a bad start and the game was tied 2-2 when he left, and then they end up losing that game 4-2, you know, that's the type of thing where in years past that didn't happen, you know, in the Royals, those 14, 15, you know, even if you even really 13, 14, 15 and 16, really, you know, the bullpen was so good in those years that if the game was tied or the Royals had a lead as of the seventh inning, it was pretty much over. You know, if they had the lead, they weren't losing it. And if they didn't have the lead, they were keeping you where you were so that your bullpen was more likely to make a mistake.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what happened for those, you know, those few seasons there. And unfortunately, that's not the case anymore. So, you know, if the Royals are, if it's tied like that game I was talking about, or if there's another game, maybe they're up 2-1 or 3-1 or something, you know, they cannot take their foot off the gas. They've got to keep going because unfortunately, the bullpen's just not going to be as reliable as it was in years past. And unfortunately, that's kind of a scary prospect because when you've got a team who's been as anemic offensively as the Royals, and it's only worth mentioning how poorly they've been offensively so far this year because the thought process was that they would be very poor offensively. So, you know, there is logic behind the Royals, unfortunately, not getting a whole lot better than they are now. They'll certainly get better because it's just so early season and stats are inflated. But, you know, overall, not really getting much better offensively. So, you know, it needs some aspect of the Royals team needs to step up if they want to get more out of the season than what people are expecting. If that means that, you know, Duffy and Jason Hamill and whoever else have to really step up starting pitching, or if it means that, you know, Justin Grimm and whoever else, I don't even know who of these would even be candidates of doing anything good from the rest of the bullpen besides the good ones that I mentioned. You know, I mean, if those guys are going to have to step up and perform a lot more consistently, or the offense is going to have to, you know, score a lot of runs. So I don't know which of those is most likely. I guess if I had to make a prediction now, I'd say the starting pitching stepping up might be the most likely of those three things happening. I mean, what do you think of those three possible scenarios? If one of those has to step up, who's most likely in your book?
I don't know.
Is it even worth having this exercise?
Well, and I think, you know, early on, I think Justin Grimm, for the most part, has pitched well, but he did hang a curveball that got hit out, just barely cleared the fence. So that, you know, I'll give him maybe a pass on that. He's kind of jumped up and sort of is the eighth inning guy. I don't know. Maurer blew that one lead early. I guess it's all early, but, you know, that second game against the White Sox blew the lead. And that kind of already, shifted him down the line. And Grimm stepped in, and he was able to kind of bridge to Herrera in a couple of games. Brad Keller has kind of just pitched in a couple of mop-up spots, but he relieved Duffy yesterday and pitched in the middle innings. So, you know, maybe he gets a little more work. Tim Hill has pitched pretty well. Yeah, I don't know, though. I mean, I'm a pretty vocal, confused person regarding why Blaine Boyer made the team.
Mm-hmm.
Said it last week. Said it on Twitter. I just don't know. I don't see it. I don't know why. Maurer, the stuff just doesn't seem like it's going to match up. I think Flynn will be fine. I think Birch Smith will even be fine. And he finally got an out, so he has an actual ERA now. Looked okay.
It's no longer INF.
Right, right.
That was the abbreviation they put for his ERA for infinite.
But yeah, I mean, the telling thing is that in 10 games, they've only been able to get to Herrera four times, and only two of those were actual save situations. So I think what kind of comes down to is the bullpen is going to have to kind of be that missing link, because if you get a 3-1 lead, you got to hold that lead. Or a good example of that, kind of the inverse of what the Royals had in 2015, that kind of hold them there and we'll catch up bullpen. That game against Cleveland where, Maurer gave up the walk-off homer, the Royals were up 1-0. It was cold, it was cold. I'm thinking of the game before where they won 1-0. But this game, they were up 1-0 again. And the Indians got their number 9 hitter to walk. He stole a base. And then with Francisco Lindor up, they bunted.
I had to take to Twitter for that because I couldn't believe it. I had just put my daughter to sleep. I turned the game on, and I see Francisco Lindor. I'm like, oh, God, this game's going to be over because he's going to do something crazy. And then they have him bunt.
Yeah.
Why would you take one of the best young hitters in baseball in the league and you just make him buy? Ugh.
But
if bunting wasn't stupid enough, having him – having one of your best players bunt in that situation.
What is this, college baseball?
Right? I mean, geez.
But
sorry to interrupt.
I think what it was that Cleveland was willingly playing for one run on the idea that we'll put our bullpen up against yours. And why would you not if you're Cleveland? You've got Cody Allen. You've got Tyler Olson. He was lights out. I don't think he gave up a run last year. Of course, Andrew Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Otero, I think, is still out there. A lot of really good relievers out there. So why would you not put those guys up against Brandon Maurer and Blaine Boyer and, whoever else? Yeah, of course you'll do that. So I think that kind of shows maybe one small decision that might have been a little different if it was the same bullpen the Royals used to have. If it was the Hochaver, Madsen, Herrera, Davis bullpen, it might be a little bit different. You might swing away there to try to get the 2-1 lead instead of playing and willingly taking the tie and seeing what you do in the bottom of an inning. Turns out Brandon Maurer gives up a homer, and, there you go. You're going home a winner. So, I think most teams would probably do that. If you've got a chance to if you're the home team and you've got a chance to play a tie game where you're probably not going to see the Royals' best reliever. Yeah, do it. So those guys definitely need to step up. If that's Flynn, who I think is better than his numbers would suggest so far, or someone stepping up like Kevin Lenick or Richard Lovelady or Kevin McCarthy, who's pitched pretty well a couple of times up to Kansas City, that might be what it takes. And, hopefully that helps the Royals protect some leads and gives them a chance to, where you blow one opportunity on offense, and that's the only chance you have to win a game. At least if you can get a 3-1 lead, maybe you can hold it a little more frequently and, actually kind of get some wins and get some momentum and develop some guys who might be future setup guys. The future HDH might be just around the corner, but you know, they've got to kind of show up and pitch like it and really kind of earn those roles and earn that trust. So far, not a lot. It's Herrera and who knows in that bullpen.
Yeah.
I mean, just there's not really a clear hierarchy, and nobody's pitched that well to earn it. I figure Tim Hill and Brad Keller will probably get a few extra looks, but they're also guys who their first major league action was 2 weeks ago. So it's not like you have to have a lot of experience. You know, if you have a live arm, that'll play, but it's certainly not like you're throwing a proven setup person into that spot. The Royals are going to have to kind of just play it by ear and hope that things work out.
Yeah. And, well, it'll be interesting to see if they do or not. A lot of season left, though, folks. A lot of season left. So
there is.
You know, it's the Royals are 3-7. They're in last place right now. But who knows? Lots of season left, like I said. And, you know, I mean, you have, let's see, I mean, before, you know, Cleveland was 4-5 at one point. You know, now they're 7-5, of course, but that's, you know, it's, you can right the ship, you can change. Royals could go on a little mini run here. I don't know that I see it happening anytime soon.
You know,
seen, but it's certainly possible. And, you know, hopefully they can pull something together. And because there are some things that could be, you know, as we talked about kind of the off season, there are some things that could be really exciting and fun to watch on this team. And like you said, with the HDH, the next HDH possibly being around the corner, seeing that develop was super fun. You know, starting in 2011 when Greg Holland kind of first really emerged as a true good option, even before he took over in the closer role, and then all the way into that 2015 season. You know, that was really fun to see that bullpen take shape and become that dominant force that it was. And, you know, I'm not saying that it's going to happen with the current bullpen that they have, but if it does, it will, you know, and this is the kind of the start of that. It'll be a lot of fun to see as that develops, and to be part of something like that again would be really cool to see. And especially, you know, when they've got Nate Karns coming back, and he's, you know, we've talked about, and they've already said he'll be in the bullpen when he comes back. So if, you know, if he's fully healthy when he gets back, you know, he could be one of those Wade Davis type guys. He's got that potential because he's got the stuff, and he's got the, you know, similar career path to Davis. So, you know, who knows? That'll be, I feel like we're saying that a lot. I feel like I've said that a lot this show, but it's, you know, unfortunately, it's kind of like we talked about in the offseason. There's so many more unknowns this year than there have been in years past for the Royals, because they were in the fortunate position where they had a lot of known quantities or known commodities that they were used, you know, that they had on the roster. And now it's not, unfortunately, it's not the same. So
not even close,
not even close, but it's a long season and they've got plenty of time to right the ship, to have, you know, still provide some good fun things to watch. And, you know, we are going to be here that whole time talking about them every week. So
like it or not,
like it or not. So we'll leave you with that on this week. And as you're, there's a good chance you might be listening to this on Friday the 13th. Happy the Friday the 13th.
Watch out for
ski masks and not ski masks, hockey masks. And
whatever else. I haven't really watched most of those movies. So
I kind of have a soft spot for them. You know, usually on Friday the 13th, late night, there'll be some random channel like Chiller or something that has like a 13th marathon. And I'll usually just put it on in the background while I'm doing other things, because why the hell not?
Yeah. But yeah, I think I saw one just on that topic, since we're just going to be nonsense anyway. It was like one random day I was out in Westport and stopped in with a friend at – it wasn't Kelly's. I'm sorry, Kelly's this particular day. We didn't drop by there, but any other time would have been at Kelly's. But we stopped in and they had one – I think it was probably one of those channels, and it was some Friday the 13th where like Jason is possessing people or something – like Friday the 13th 4 or something. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Really random, just random horror movie on at this bar.
Hmm.
I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Strange. But yeah, watched the whole dang thing. So, you know, sound wasn't on, but, you know.
Then they get into the Freddy Jason crossover.
That was on too. Yeah, yeah. That was after it. Didn't pay as much attention to that one, though.
Yes. I think that might have been the last Friday the 13th movie, because they tried to reboot the Freddy Nightmare on Elm Street, but that didn't take. But I kind of like horror movies. So it's you kind of – they get to that point and they do like – it happened with Aliens and Predator. You go – you get the crossover – and then
you're done.
That either what works or it doesn't. Yeah, so they've been able to reboot the Alien, not reboot necessarily, but to revive the Alien franchise. And there's a new Predator movie coming out.
Sure.
I don't think it's this. I don't know if it's this year or not, but soon. Hashtag soon.
Hashtag. But, yep.
Yeah. So anyway, enough about horror movies, but so have a happy Friday the 13th, and enjoy some Royals baseball this weekend. Hopefully it's nice. I know the weather report for the weekend is not supposed to be all that great, but it is supposed to be nice, at least on Friday. So hopefully the weather report is wrong, and Sunday will actually be a little bit better, especially just to enjoy the nice weather. Get out, and it feels like it's been forever. So get out, take a walk, do whatever to get outside and enjoy the nice weather while we have it. So we'll be back next week talking more Royals baseball. Until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. Before we go, of course, don't forget to visit our sponsors, as Mike mentioned. If you're in Westport, be sure to go to Kelly's, good place to watch a game. If you want to watch the game against, if you want to Shohei Ohtani pitch against the Royals, Kelly's always good place to do that. And of course, go to BP Kansas City. We've always got good content up there. We're always recapping games and whatnot. Going to be Friday Notes tomorrow from Dave Lesky, the whole deal. So be sure and check that out. Plenty of content there to satisfy all your Royals wants and desires. That's what we're here for. And that's what we hope you guys all get. So be sure to visit them. And we will see you next week. And until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.